This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
Seachtain, an Indo Ascaliga.
Time I mon iroctí a yen of chacht ar a chorp, agus súligam a machan seo, gur féidir é a chur in uig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltí, fís, turmi.
Tá sé dochreitse nach bhéadach ara i gcúrna meán an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an tálam a gináam gribh orcháir na reachtam. Iadach sé tórin gribh an orcháir stán i lis dúhal agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár ducha sin eachar. Nau ni bhin aon dár dárach sin, bhin marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This week on the Indo Daily.
I actually don't believe, right, that priests said or have any harm. It just, like, thought I knew. But that's how I found out Miriam Martina was dead.
How likely is it that Trump will be found guilty of paying hush money to former adult film star Stormy Daniels?
We're talking about involvement in serious drugs activity on both sides of the border, and as well as that, the procurement of weapons.
Find and follow us at all the usual spots and over on the Irish Independent website. This is an Irish Independent podcast.
At the end of a week filled with good news, Leinster were brought firmly back to earth by the Lions. For once, Leo Cullen's men were the ones letting the side down on a weekend where the other three Irish provinces all won, with Munster laying down a marker for their URC title defence with a big win over the Bulls up in Pretoria. The results at the weekend mean the playoff race is beginning to get interesting, while we also have a pair of AIL finals at the Aviva Stadium to look forward to on Sunday. I'm Rory O'Connor, standing in for Will Slattery, and I'm joined by Luke Fitzgerald and Keane Tracy. And lads, I think it's best to start with that big Munster win up in Pretoria. Luke, I know the URC sometimes flies under the radar, but this was two strong teams going at it at a proper stadium, and it felt like the kind of result that can kick a season into gear.
Yeah, and I suppose you would wonder if there's a little bit of similarities maybe to last year, where they kind of... Whatever it was about playing the South African teams seemed to bring the best out of Munster, particularly at the business end of the season. And then, like, even the kind of mid-season international, against the kind of second-string international squad, but in Páirc Uí, you know, seems to be something about them that inspires them. So, yeah, I wonder, will that be a bit of a catalyst for them? I think they need to try and salvage something out of the season. I do think the squad is a little bit too good to have... Now, look, they've obviously had terrible injuries, but I think it's a bit too good for them to be not at least competing pretty heavily in one competition. And obviously after the poor showing in the cup, you know, the league is all that's left for them. So interesting if they can refocus and have one more big push for the end of the season and maybe do the impossible, or what would have seemed impossible a couple of weeks ago. You know, this team, I think, still has some really top quality operators, a really good 9-10 axis. And that back five of the pack is, you know, pretty formidable, you know, particularly when Simon's there. So, I don't think anyone will want to face them in the last, in the latter parts of the competition. And based on the weekend's performance and result, I think they strike fear into most teams, you know.
Keen, I thought the reaction a couple of weeks ago when they went out to Northampton, I thought it was a little bit over the top. I know Snyman's leaving and there's probably a couple of retirements coming. But even in this near time window of the end of the season, when you look at their run-in, I think they've played their hardest game at the weekend and won it. And there's a real potential there to build momentum. They have a singular focus, unlike Leinster, because they're not in Europe anymore. There's a real opportunity here for Munster to get a couple of home games maybe in the knockouts as well and try and repeat what they did last year.
Yeah, I agree with Luke. The sense of deja vu is pretty strong, really, when you look at the run they went on last season. And I would agree, Rudd, like the Northampton game, you can't just, I know you were over there, you can't just ignore the fact that a bug ripped through the squad the previous week. And look, they didn't look to use that as an excuse, but it was a microcosm of their season, really, when you think about it, because Munster haven't, I would say, haven't been able to kick on after winning the URC last season, mainly because of a really costly injury list throughout the season. And you saw at the weekend, that was one of the strongest 23s that they've been able to name since the very start of the season. And that was one of the reasons, look, obviously why they got an unbelievable win. The red card, we can get into that, was obviously a factor as well. But you look at the way Graham Rowntree and the Munster coaches went about their team selection, and in particular in stacking the bench. They haven't had that luxury at all this season. And it was really smart, in fairness, to stack the bench, knowing that it was going to be at altitude. They were going to need, you know, fresh impetus off the bench. And that really paid off, because when you see the team being named, and like the likes of Tom Ahern, Gavin Coombs, John Hodnett, Craig Casey, all guys who really you would imagine are first choice starters being named on the bench, that could have backfired, but it proved to be a masterstroke, I would say, by Graham Rowntree and the coaches. And the bench really did play a big part in getting Munster over the line in that second half. And I agree, I think this is the kind of victory that could galvanize them. You know, they've got another tough game in South Africa this weekend. If they were to come back with two wins under their belt, heading into those final couple of regular season games ahead of what they will hope will be home knockout games in Thomond Park, that would be a massive win. And I think it would kind of maybe calm the hysteria that's been going around, probably in wider circles really at the moment. And look, I know they are losing a couple of big players ahead of next season, but when Munster have like all of their players on board, they're a match for anyone.
Is anyone more important than Snyman? Because the difference he made to them on Saturday, I know they had that bench picked really well. I know Crowley played really well. Conor Murray rolled back the years, one of his best performances I've seen from him in a long, long time. But one player, and I know he's leaving at the end of it, he's one of those players Keane touched on, but he elevates what they do. He just gives them that chance to break the line out of nowhere from time to time. I thought he was exceptional on Saturday.
Yeah, no surprise you're bringing him up, Rudge. Your favourite, Orji Snyman. Yeah, no, look, I thought he had a big impact. You know, I think that'd be like, it's interesting. He's back for the business end again, isn't he? And you're kind of thinking, oh, like the heartbreak now if he goes, when he goes, you know, and if they see him going up the road to Leinster, who could be, you know, off the back of, you know, I think they're probably favourites at this stage. Are they close enough to lose for the cup? But if they have a cup in their back pocket and Snyman going up the road, having helped, you know, Munster maybe to something good in the league at the end of the season, I think there'll be uproar, I think, won't there? It won't be a good look. But yeah, look, he's a big player for them. The key thing for him is obviously going to be staying fit. If he can do that, he has a big part to play for them. And I think as well, we probably don't talk about it enough, but the impact that it'd have on your front row as well, having him pushing behind you, having that weight. Like, it's not just the top of the ground stuff that he's so good at, that offloading game, etc. There's more to it than that with him. You know, I think he has a huge impact on the team, and he has that belief from being, you know, a World Cup winner. So they'd be sad to see him go, but there's still a lot of rugby to be played this season. And I think he could be a key guy. I think you're right.
Yeah, it's all about making the most of him while you have him, I guess. Keane, I was going to say the game turned. It didn't really turn. I think Munster were firmly worth their first half anyway. And I know the Bulls had a good second quarter, but that red card, Johan Goosen, the high shot on Craig Casey, Jake White wasn't happy. I don't know if he was saying it wasn't a red card. I think he was more drawing the parallels with Luke McGrath decision at the end of the first half of the Bulls' defeat at the RDS a couple of weeks ago. Talk more about consistency. But to me, it looked like whatever's gone on in the past, it was still the right decision. And you know, it's discipline from your own player rather than a great injustice against the team, I would have thought.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I think Luke McGrath was very lucky that that wasn't a red card in the RDS a couple of weeks ago. I think most people would agree with that, but that doesn't mean that Johan Goosen shouldn't got sent off for his high and late shot really on Craig Casey. Look, it's obviously difficult for taller players trying to tackle a player of Craig Casey's stature, but it's no excuse really. And yeah, it did cost his side the game. You've got to be better than that. And, you know, even in the commentary at the time, I know it wasn't picked up, but you only needed one replay to see it back that it was high and it was costly. And yeah, the Bulls, you know, they obviously rested their players for the Champions Cup game against Northampton with the intention of absolutely rolling Munster over at home, and that didn't pay off at all. And they've left themselves now with a bit of work to do, because I was kind of thinking, I was at that game at the RDS a couple of weeks ago, and I was thinking, look, they're just waiting to get the likes of Munster back in Pretoria on the Highveld and, you know, push on. And I thought I still think they will be thereabouts come the end of the season, but I wasn't like overly impressed with them. I thought that was the kind of game where they really needed to kind of kick Munster while they were down. And instead we got a classic Munster response, and I agree with you. I think Orgie Snyman was absolutely to the fore, and in some ways it probably rubbed salt into the wounds a little bit, because look, I think Orgie Snyman played a really big part in Munster winning the URC title last season in terms of being fit for the end game. I know he missed most of the season, but you're right, Rod. I mean, players feed off that. You can imagine the amount that the likes of Tom Ahern has learned. And look, this was something that Bernard Jackman touched on the commentary in RT at the time, but there have been a few concerns that, you know, Jean Kleyn's eye injury might be a little bit more serious than they first imagined. Now, I'm going to be going on the Munster press conference call by the time this podcast is out. It'll be released. So I'm going to ask whatever coach is up for a bit of an update on that, because I know a few Munster supporters have been on to me kind of hearing the rumours as well. And look, you would just hope that that's not true. Obviously for Jean Kleyn on a personal level, that goes without say. But if Munster are losing Orgie Snyman and Jean Kleyn is potentially, again, we're not sure yet, going to miss some of next season, then that would make losing Snyman even worse.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it'd be a disaster. I've heard the same rumours, but, you know, I haven't heard it strong enough to be able to write it or anything like that. So it'd be good to get some clarity for Munster on it. Luke, the remaining games, like they're 6 points back from Leinster at the top of the URC table. They played the Lions this weekend. We know the Lions are pretty good. They tanked Leinster at the weekend, but they're back in 11th. Then they play Connacht, Ulster and Edinburgh. Not in that order, but they're the three remaining fixtures. None of them, you know, they're all competing, I guess, for the top eight spots, but none of them will be teams that Munster would be afraid of in any way. And Leinster still have a shadow squad in South Africa, play the Stormers this weekend. Glasgow have two games in South Africa. They're the two teams ahead of them. Like, Munster should be probably aiming for that top spot. And I know they won it away from home last week, but there's a real opportunity here for them.
No, look, it definitely has. And I think Leinster are possibly making a similar error than they've made the last couple of years. I believe the coaching staff is flying back as well. Look, I know they want to get the job done, but sometimes I just feel like you're better off playing your guys at the end of the season. You know, I kind of expressed that view last year about Leinster. I thought they made a big mistake in that semi-final against Munster. I don't think they'll make it in the qualification stage of the competition, but I always feel like you just want to close off a really good year's work with a strong finish, and it gives you momentum going into the kind of knockout stages. And it's not just all about the cup. Like, I don't know if that always transfers over. I think there's like a massive big kind of emotional you expend a huge amount of emotional energy, I think, in the cup, because you kind of generally have a couple of weeks between each round, and you kind of build up towards it. But I always think it's important to kind of keep that consistency between that, and yes, add a few guys in, but wholesale changes I'm not 100% sure. Now look, the trip to South Africa probably does make sense that you keep a few guys rested, but maybe you fly them back in the middle. Maybe logistically that's a nightmare and cost-wise, but I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I'm a little bit nervous from Leinster's perspective about the end of the season. I'd like to see them close it off properly. And I do think you're right. I think this maybe does open up a window for Munster. Now, in saying that, still two interpros for them to go. Like, they're never easy, even if the other two aren't playing. Well, now, Connacht were obviously good in the weekend, but who are they playing, I suppose? But at the same time, if they have their frontliners back, they will cause Munster some issues, you know. And look, Ulster as well, couldn't call it a revival, but they got away with one last weekend, I think. Even Richie alluded to that. But look, they'd be desperate to get like a win against a rival too. So it's not all plain sailing. I agree. Definitely not afraid of any of the opposition they're coming up against, but still, you know, they need to be on top of their game to get 4-4, I think, which is what looks like they need, you know.
Keane, like, Leinster are trying to do pull off the same trick that they've tried for the last couple of years. It hasn't worked for them in either competition the last couple of years. They would argue that they got the strategy right. It was the performances that let them down. But do you share Luke's sense? I know there was an RFU stipulation that some of the players had to be rested at some stage, and they decided to rest them last weekend. But do you share Luke's sense that this not bringing their frontliners on this two-week tour of South Africa before a European semi-final at Croke Park against Northampton was maybe the wrong way to go about the end of the season?
Yeah, this is something that we've been chatting about off air, Rod. I do think there is a risk, and I agree with Luke, that Leinster are potentially sleepwalking into the exact same scenario that they maybe haven't learned from past mistakes. Obviously, the complications are obvious with South Africa, but and they didn't have... Look, it wasn't by any means a first-choice Leinster team, but they did have a few senior guys in there, like Keane Healy, Jason Jenkins, Kieran Frawley, you know, that. So it wasn't a totally kind of academy kind of side or whatever you want to call it. But like three weeks by the time the game comes around without a game is a long time. Now, I know Northampton rested a lot of their guys for their win over Leicester last weekend as well, but it wasn't just that the Leinster players had last weekend off, because I sat down with James Ryan for an interview last week, and he's obviously injured at the moment. He's hoping to be back by the end of the season. It sounds like Croke Park might come a little bit too soon. But I was also chatting to Jameson Gibson-Park, who is obviously fit at the moment. And it wasn't just that they didn't have a game. They weren't really training either. They just had like a few days off because obviously the coaches were down in South Africa. And I'm not sure that's the right way to go about it. I understand the player management system, and I'm sure they were doing bits and pieces to keep themselves ticking over. But by the time I was talking to Jameson Gibson-Park, he hadn't even seen his Leinster teammates to get the gauge of what the mood was like from signing Jordy Barrett, apart from a couple of WhatsApp messages, you know. So I'm not sure that that's ideal preparation. And look, I don't think Leinster will take Northampton for granted. They'd be absolutely foolish that they're flying high at the top of the Premiership for a reason. But I would have thought that maybe a few more of the frontliners would have went down to South Africa, and they would have found a way. If they're sending Andrew Goodman and Jack Nienaber back, which I believe is the plan that they're on their way back to Dublin, then they could have possibly sent a few players back as well. So look, that would have helped them on many fronts, I think. I think it would have kept them ticking over, but it also would have given them a better chance to beat a Lions team who, I have to say, have probably surprised me this season. Their improvements, they did a great job in Connacht a few weeks ago as well. And they were awesome in patches against Leinster. I know the stats were a bit skewed in that, but if you had a few more frontliners on that, I think, Rod, if Leinster are going to come back having lost, which is a very real possibility now, if they had lost both games, which is in comparison to Munster, who are going to come back hopefully with two wins. But if Leinster come back with two defeats and you're trying to build back up to go into a Champions Cup semi-final, I know it's going to be a very different team, but that doesn't do much for the squad's morale either, does it? So it's a tricky balance, and I hope they get it right as well, but I would have concerns.
Yeah, well, I think they lose control of their own destiny, because Glasgow are playing Zebre at the weekend, so they will go ahead of them if Leinster lose at the Stormers this weekend. Luke, we're used to Leinster teams, no matter who's on the pitch performing, whether it's away to Glasgow, they've, you know, the shadow squad has got big results over the last couple of years. I know the South Africans have brought something different to the tournament, but they did win in Johannesburg last year, Leinster, with a shadow side. I know they got a heavy tonking against the Bulls the following week. They've less of a cushion. They've lost three regular season games this season, and they've left it a bit more open to the chasing pack. Is the caliber of the second string just not as strong as it was in previous years? Has the competition improved? What do you put Saturday's performance down to? Because it was so un-Leinster-like to kind of start so slowly, be so inaccurate, leave so many points behind for visits to the 22.
Yeah, look, I think there's probably a number of factors that feed into it. It's probably not just a simple, you know, this is what it is. I don't think it's a question of squad depth or quality. I do think, you know, what is going to be really challenging, and it's been a big issue I have with probably Leinster and lots of the guys there, there's some really, really good players there. I think there's a brilliant squad there, definitely not a lack of depth. I just think there's less games for them to play now. And I think that's a real challenge for younger players coming into this setup now. And I think it's probably why I think more people should be thinking about, you know, moving across and having a bit more of a fluid system between the provinces, because I think they're missing out on a lot of quality at Leinster that's sitting there doing, you know, kind of pushing tin in the gym. And I think that's probably a factor, Rudds. You know, I think, like, I'd expect them to be better this week. Now, obviously, a tonking will do that to you. But at the same time, I think there's really good, there is enough quality there for them to show better. I think South Africa is also another factor. Sorry, South Africa is a very, very difficult place to go and play and hit the ground running, particularly, you know, if you're playing at, you know, at altitude. So those are big challenges for you to kind of, to mesh a team that doesn't play together well, people who don't play that often, and as well, a very difficult, challenging kind of place to go and play a rugby. It's a mesh of those three factors for me that kind of leads to a result like that. But look, I think they'll have an opportunity to bounce back, and I expect them to do that albeit, like, will it be enough down there? I don't know. And I do think you're right. I think the door is more ajar this year. Might be no harm. Might be no harm for them to have to go to an away fixture or have to do something more challenging if they don't finish in the top spot, if they finish, you know, three or something like that. So could be a good thing for them, possibly.
And it's a different run-in this year in terms of the final is on the 25th of May. There's a round of URC and then it's quarterfinal, semi-final, final. So it's a clean run on it. So they probably have more squad available for the knockouts than they maybe had last year when Leo Cullen kind of sent out, rotated his team heavily for that Munster game and they came a cropper. Keane, like, we're a week on from the Geordie Barrett news, maybe a little bit more. We talked a little bit about it last week with Luke. Leinster went then and appointed Tyler Byandall as their attack coach. Then they went and sold out Croke Park. I know that money will be distributed across Europe. That's not money for them. That's EPCR money that it will go back into everyone's coffers. So that sellout is good news for everyone. Having had a kind of week to digest the Barrett news, all the talk about central contracts, have you kind of settled on an opinion on where you think this needs to go? You know, is there an imbalance created by the fact that Leinster is so dominant? Do the IRFU need to tweak their model? Do they need to work on a little bit? I know the financial model is under review. I'm not, you know, there's talk the central contract model is under review, although I was told equivocally by Kevin Potts of the IRFU last year that that's not happening, that it's a financial review that's happening. David Humphreys is coming in. Like, where do you think this needs to go? Because Munster have proven this weekend that, like, there's no perm out to be played here. They're still a good team. Leinster, you know, have all the aces at the moment. But do you feel like the IRFU need to kind of come in and meddle with the market a little bit to try and make things a little bit more even and make the playing field more level?
Well, first of all, if I had the answer, I'd be a very wealthy IRFU employee sitting at the table with my nice fancy blazer. Look, there are so many different strands and angles that you can come at this from. Like, I would be very surprised if the IRFU went away from, as in completely went away from the model that they have at the moment, simply because the Ireland national team is the cash cow and we are probably in the most successful period for Irish rugby. That's what drives all the revenue. I'd be very surprised if they fiddled with it to such an extent that would make that detrimental. Now, obviously, you have a scenario whereby Leinster looks like you're going to have 10 centrally contracted players next season when Jameson Gibson-Park gets put on one, which isn't ideal. And look, I know I can understand other provinces' supporters' frustration. Absolutely. I know even in my own circles, a lot of people I know don't really enjoy watching or supporting Ireland, is probably a better phrase, because it is so Leinster heavy. And look, a lot of people will disagree with that, but that's just from people I know, because they see the team sheet come out on a Thursday, whatever it is, for Ireland playing in Six Nations, and they look at the number of Leinster players and they become disillusioned with that. And that's fair enough. You don't want, as in, that's fair enough to have that opinion, but you don't want fans to be, you know, disenfranchised with the national team, particularly at a time when Ireland are so successful. But I don't think we should be, by the same token, we should be sticking the boot in on Leinster at all here. I mean, they are the standard bearers for a reason. Obviously, there's reasons for that in terms of the finances, in terms of the school system, in terms of the population. Everyone understands that. But I think, like, the Geordie Barrett signing, I think people lost a run of themselves a little bit for that, forgetting that it's only for 6 months. It's not like this is a guy who's coming in on a 3-year lucrative contract. I mean, could you blame Leinster for wanting to bring this guy in? And look, I know he will take game time from certain guys, but you would hope that the payback will be worth it on the back end of it after he leaves. But I think we discussed Munster there. I think Connacht are obviously further behind, and Ulster are, I would say, a mess at the moment, certainly off the pitch, and on the pitch they're struggling as well. But I think Munster, with all of their players, look, they're behind Leinster, but I don't think they're as far behind as Leinster as a lot of people have probably made out over the last week or so. And I also think it's worth reminding ourselves that Munster have done, like, great work. Like, they're the only team at the moment, the Irish team at the moment, with a trophy in their cabinet. I think they've put a lot of good things in place behind the scenes. I was down in Limerick a few weeks ago speaking to Ian Costello, who is, I suppose, basically their guy Easterby really now at the moment. He still does a little bit of coaching, but that's a new role that was implemented by a guy who knows the province inside out. he was telling me about their talent ID system, that how it's spread all across the province at the moment, and the data they have on teenagers that are coming through. So I think Munster really do have their house in order. It might take a couple of years to see more of these young players coming through, but I don't have as many concerns over Munster falling further behind Leinster than a lot of people seem to do. I think Munster are doing a lot of things well, but it wouldn't surprise me if the IRFU do maybe look to tweak the central contracting system to make it a little bit more fairer. But I think it's really hard to know how they do that.
Luke, is it more about kind of maybe a bit of leveling up and kind of helping the other provinces? Like I listened to an interview Andrew Trimble did with the Ulster's interim CEO, Hugh McCaughey, and like their budget's down. Basically, they've lost income and they've had to cut their cloth, and that's why Stephen Kitsoff's go back to South Africa. That's why they're losing 7 or 8 players at the end of this season. You know, big players, you know, that have been first teamers for the last couple of years. Is it more about getting the other provinces up to a level where they're getting the big European games, getting home games, getting income coming in that they can support themselves, invest into their academies, that sort of thing, rather than killing the golden goose at the top, coming up with a kind of a structure that kind of enables them to come up rather than trying to cut Leinster off at the knees?
To talk about the specific signing here that's kind of causing the hullabaloo or whatever, I think, is that one doesn't make sense. I know it's short-term keen, so I get the point on that, but I just don't like the idea of it. I just think it's a bit, like, Leinster just do not need it.
It's funny, Luke, you've made that point. I listened to James Tracy make that point as well. And I think one other Leinster, former Leinster player, not far out of it as well. Do you think that's been received as well in the dressing room? If that's the way you guys are perceiving the signing, would you worry that maybe it's an unsettling one for, because there's so many Irish internationals in his position?
I don't know is the honest answer to that. And I think it's probably a worthwhile question, because like if I was looking at that, I'd be thinking, well, like what more do I need to do to kind of secure a place here, you know? And am I going to be undercut? Like you've got a British and Irish line in there. You've got, you know, Gary Ringrose. Osborne looks like a real player as well now. So it doesn't really make sense to me. And then even if you look at the back three, you probably have the best. I don't think he gets ahead of Hugo Keenan for sure.
Does he get on the right wing though, do you think, Duke?
The wing. But so like now, so this is a really interesting thing. So we've now been talking about on the wing, you know, in Ireland and not producing kind of much quality there over the last while, or people we think are really kind of out and out, like top class international wingers. But I think Jordan Larmour looks like he's coming back into some serious form. He's playing some great stuff. I think I'd hate to curtail a bit of that if you know, he keeps the momentum going and stays injury free. Jimmy O'Brien coming back into the mix there as well. James Lowe is probably a lockdown position. I don't think Barrett's a better winger than him. So I just don't get it. I think the numbers don't add up in terms of who do you drop out? And I wonder how much money they're spending on that. Like, I wonder, like, to my mind, that money would have been better spent possibly on someone sitting behind Tyke Furlong, like get a real jazzy, you know, tight head prop behind him. But
that could be coming too, though.
Sorry?
That could be on the way too.
Yeah, but like that'd be instant. That would not sit right with me when I look at, say, Munster, who it looks to me like the only part of the jigsaw then in Munster that you'd think against the top-class teams that they possibly have an issue. So, like, why would Leinster then get a top-class tight head to sit in behind Tyke Furlong? Now, I know he's going to be away on international duty and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know. I find it, the whole thing, a little bit concerning. I don't think it makes a massive sense in terms of your the best deployment of your resources. I think when I think of Munster, that in the big games, I would hate to see that kind of front row situation, like stop them from kind of advancing a little bit further in the competition. There was other reasons for that this year, but say all things went to plan in the cup this year, I think in the latter stages, all of us would have said it's that front row that you'd be a little bit concerned about Munster. It's not anything else. So that'd be one kind of situation. And I wonder, is it a bit of a waste or a resource? If you think about how much money they're going to have to spend to entice the likes of Barrett over, you're probably thinking, is it 300K or something like that? Like that could be, That could easily be 250Ks to someone else. Like you get some top class players for that up to Ulster. So look, I have a bit of a concern about that and the deployment of resources there. But it's Leinster to do with what they want. Now, what I would say is, I think you're right in terms of trying to bring the other provinces up rather than cutting Leinster down. I don't think we want to be doing that. But it just doesn't. Some of the things haven't really added up. Like the Snyman moving up to Leinster this season. And you've Maloney now leaving, who's actually been a very good player. Now, of course, there's a bit of a difference between the two players, but Leinster's frontliners are both starting internationals. So that one doesn't make sense to me either. And he'd have a bigger impact at Munster or Ulster. So I'm struggling to get my head around it. I don't like the Barrett one because I think it's going to be sitting a young Irish player out. No fault with him coming up. I think he'll be a great fit in there and he'll have a great time. But I'm not mad keen on that one. And I'm not mad keen on the Snyman one in hindsight. It doesn't look like a great move for anyone.
I think a big part of it, just from even talking to Leo Cullen yesterday, is the fact that they're going to be playing their home games in the Aviva next year, and they want to sell more season tickets, and having a star All Black and a star Springbok helps. But I guess one place where they didn't have any problem shifting tickets, and as I say, it's an EPCR event, but Leinster definitely played a part in it with their new spicier Twitter account last week and the promotion that they had around the game. Keane, like, to sell out Croke Park within a couple of hours of the tickets going on general sale, it's some endorsement for the health of the game in this province where we're all sitting at the moment, but also in Ireland. Even like from the ground up, you look at the kind of the attendances at the AAL semi-finals at the weekend, the interest in rugby right now, I don't think it's ever been bigger. And I have to say, I was surprised this sold out Croke that quickly. I thought Bank Holiday weekend, Northampton not being the most glamorous opponent, that's a tough sell, but geez, they pulled it off, and they pulled it off quick.
Yeah, I was chatting to a couple of people behind the scenes, and I think they were quite hopeful being the key word there, that they would sell it out kind of, you know, the couple of days leading up to it. But definitely, I think the pace or the speed with which it sold out caught a lot of people by surprise in the best possible way. I mean, the demand is great. Look, we're very fortunate, I suppose, all of us to be in the position we are, being able to cover Irish rugby at the moment. And that probably goes back to the point I made, that I just can't see the IRFU, you know, jeopardizing that in any way possible. So I would agree with you in terms of trying to get everyone else up to them. But 82,000 people in Croke Park, I mean, we haven't had a game there since 2009. It's going to be absolutely insane. It's crazy to think that a semi-final is going to blow the final attendance out of the water. And actually, incidentally, I just saw there before we started recording that the FA Cup final is going to be kicking off 15 minutes after the Champions Cup final in London on the same day. So that is going to be very interesting, particularly if Leinster do manage to get there, for any supporters who are travelling over, trying to get the tube and that out to North London. It could be absolutely chaos. It sounds like the Dart isn't going to be running to Croke Park on the day of next week. So all these little things to manoeuvre. But it's a testament to, I think, the work that Leinster have done. You'd have to say both on and off the pitch, to be fair, to be able to sell out Croke Park that quickly. And I think you're right, Rod. I think you make a very good point that, you know, signing the likes of Jordy Barrett on a 6-month deal, getting Orgie Snyman in, is definitely going to help boost their sales. Because I think there was definitely a fear in some sort of quarters that, you know, if they got 50,000 in Croke Park, which probably would have been a good number, you think of selling out the Aviva if that had been available, that it would have been a bit lost in Croke Park. So now we have a scenario where it's going to be incredible. I think also, just to touch on the previous point, just a final one on it, I think one of the main reasons why Leinster have been so keen to get the likes of Snyman and to get Jordy Barrett in for 6 months is that, like, we can't lose sight of the fact that they've gone two seasons without winning a trophy. They haven't won the Champions Cup since 2018. Now, the irony is that by the time these lads arrive, Leinster could finally have got that fifth star on their jersey, and you're kind of going, okay, but from Leinster's point of view, I can understand a little bit why they want to strengthen their squad, because they haven't been able to get over the line when it matters most in the last few seasons.
Look, the Croke Park thing, like, the players are back in UCD. The majority of the players who played against La Rochelle, I even think one or two more have possibly flown home from South Africa to join them. Neen Abber's on his way. Andrew Goodman flew home at the weekend. How much do you think they'll use Croke Park as a motivational factor, as kind of trying to build a team around playing there? Like, having played there yourself, I know it's very different than you've spoken recently about how it can be a bit of a tough place to play in comparison to the kind of more routine rugby grounds. But just the once off, I know they might play there again, but in these players have never played in this stadium apart from Keane Healy. The once off nature of it, is that something that they can kind of use to their advantage?
Yeah, I'd say there'd be some very excited guys there. Particularly, I'd say anyone with a GAA background would be unbelievably privileged and excited to play there. That was a big focus for me. You know what I mean? When I was there, that, you know, obviously having kind of switched to, well, not switched to rugby, but gone the rugby kind of stream route in terms of my sporting decision. And, you know, I was so excited to play there. You know, you always kind of, you know, any young kid, that's the dream, you know, in Ireland is to play in Croke Park. And, you know, getting to do it with in a rugby jersey was pretty special. So, yeah, I'd imagine those conversations will definitely take place. And they want to make it a day to remember. My biggest thing, I think, with Leinster is that I hope they just don't overdo it a little bit, you know, and build it up too emotionally. I thought they did that really well against La Rochelle. They got a handle on their emotions, which was, I think, one of the big differences between, you know, one of the differences anyway, definitely between last year's performance and this year. But I just think over the course of that kind of rivalry. So I hope that they kind of keep it calm, keep it measured. I think they've got, you know, like, I think they'll deliver on the physicality just because of the enormity of the occasion and the match. So the key thing is that they're cold and calculated and, you know, worry about those things, because I think if you get those things right, you know, and you deliver on what I think they've got the best potential and headroom in terms of how far they can go and what kind of performance they can deliver, they'll have a great day. And that all looks after itself. Then the memories will all happen based off the kind of the process that you go through on the day. And that'll be important for them. I don't think they want to get too ahead of themselves and too excited about it, you know.
Keane, Ulster and Connacht both got wins at the weekend. Ulster, not very impressively, needed a fairly sizable decision towards the end to get over it. I think probably the right decision in my mind, although people are still debating that at this stage. But Connacht fairly comfortable against Zebre on Saturday night. But there's four teams, they're two of four teams locked on 39 points. They're ninth, Connacht are ninth, Ulster are 10th. Then there's two teams up on 40 and Benetton are 42. It's really, really tight in this playoff race. Do you see either of these teams being good enough to get into the top eight and secure Champions Cup qualification for next season?
Yeah, you'd have to say it's brilliantly tight from a neutral's perspective. I mean, the league has been brilliant. And I touched on the Lions earlier this season. They've really added something different, I think, as well this season. And they're right in the mix as well. They're on 39 points with Connacht and Ulster as well. To answer your question, Rod, I wouldn't have faith in either of them, if I'm being honest, purely because their form has been so patchy and they've been up and down. Look, Richie Murphy has come in at a tricky time at such an important stage of the season late on. And I would imagine there's only so much that he can change in such a short period of time. I'm sure he's going to have his own ideas and things like that, but it's difficult to do that at that stage of the season. So he's probably trying to slowly change without knowing if he's going to be there next season or not. So I think Ulster really need to figure that out if Richie Murphy is going to be the man going forward. And I'd like to see him being the man going forward. I think his body of work speaks for itself. But Ulster have just been so hit and miss. I mean, their Challenge Cup defeat the previous week, I watched that game in Claremont. They were really poor. They were absolutely blown out of the water. And yeah, look, I would agree. I think the decision was right for that Reece Carey knock-on. It was very tight, but I think they came to the right decision. But there's no doubt that they got out of jail. And then,
what about the is it? I'm going to try the second.
Oh, yeah.
Should I just say Cormac? Is it Chukwu? Like, I actually, sorry, not to give you a leading question as such, but it'd be interesting to get your opinion at least. It looked to me like he was trying to get his body around. I gave him the benefit of the doubt. It looked like he was trying to get the body around to give him another reef into touch and carry him in, carry him backwards. Did you think it was definitely trying to get the feet under the ball and therefore penalty try?
I think if you're a Cardiff fan, you're furious that that's not.
We know what they think.
Yeah, if that goes against your team, I think you're furious that it's not a penalty try and possibly a yellow card. I know what you're saying. He might not have meant it, but he still knocked the ball out of his hand with his leg, and I think that should have probably been a penalty try. So that's what I mean. Like, Ulster absolutely got out of jail. What did you think, Rod? Did you think it was
I think it was such a unique incident that they almost didn't know what to look at in a kind of a weird way, and if they'd really taken their time over it, it's not legal, you know. It doesn't matter whether it's intent, you can't do it, you know. It was an amazing medicine.
Did you think he was trying to contort his body around Rhodes? That's I kind of felt like it looked like it was almost like an accidental type scenario where, so he gets him down, they're sliding towards it. I nearly felt he was trying to get his legs across to almost like pull him back towards the touchline. That was now being, maybe I'm being naive on that. What do you think about that?
I don't think he could, at the speed he was executing the tackle, I don't think he could have ever envisaged what he pulled off. I think it was a freak incident, but, you know, he was lucky enough to get away with it, even though it was such an impressive thing to do at the same time. And I think if it happened against Ulster, Ravenhill would have been up in arms, would have got them out of the middle of a slumber that's up there at the moment. I guess Isatuku is a classic example of a player who I think has bags of potential, but just hasn't really been kicking on. And like Luke, we're not really seeing a bounce from Richie Murphy coming in mid-season. Like, you know, we know how many players are leaving, how much doom and gloom there is. Like, squeezing over the line against a Cardiff team that don't have that much to play for at the end, it's not inspirational, really.
No, but like, he was never got, like, you can only work with what you have. And I think you've got to remember, like, this has kind of been, I think it's kind of been a slowish decline, I think. And they're now at a real low ebb. And now you've got other issues that would really, I think, dampen the spirits there. You got the financial stuff in the background. You know, they always seem to be able to get a player or two where you're going to go, oh, well, look, there's still funds up there. And you had a few kind of exciting young players, but they're not that young anymore, you know. So, it's a very challenging scenario that he's gone into. I wouldn't be kind of laying the blame on his feet. I don't think that'd be fair. But you know, what you would love to see is just a little. If he could, I think a big result for him would be if we would at the end of the if they got through to the knockouts, massive result, yeah. But if they also showed a little bit of consistency week to week, I think you could say, okay, that's a job well done, Richie, because that has been the biggest issue the last couple of years, that you get the Leinster performance at Christmas and then you get, say, last week's, you know, against Claremont, where it's just a complete collapse. You get these massive range of performances week to week. I think if you could close that up and say, okay, well, this is what we get from this Ulster team every week at a minimum, and that's pretty close to getting, you know, to getting a win each week, I think that'd be a result for me, and you could kind of build on that next season. But it's a bloody tough job, isn't it? And it just feels like it's kind of, they need a few lifts. Like, last week would be a big lift for them. They got out of jail, and he even said in his interview, I was glad to see he was kind of honest about it, in fairness. But yeah, look, I think it's really, really challenging job up there. And I think steadying the ship would be priority number one for me up there.
So, like, they play Benetton on Friday in Belfast, and that's no gimme, but it's a real opportunity for them. Keane, just Connacht's performance, like, Zebre are a team they should be beating, but Matthew Devine, like, we saw what he could do with the Ireland 20s. He really looks like he's taken to the pro game in a position where Ireland don't have a huge amount of depth. I know it's a long way to go between beating Zebre and getting an Ireland cap, but he looks like a player of real promise.
He was excellent. If anything, I'm surprised that it's taken him a couple of years to make the breakthrough. He was really impressive for the 20s a couple of years ago, as is his brother John. So you imagine they're going to be playing for in the same Connacht team in the not too distant future. But look, Connacht have been on the road, I think, for the previous three games before that, and Zebre coming to Galway was an ideal time, I think, to, you know, Luke touched on there, steadying the ship in terms of Ulster. That was an ideal game to get a bit of confidence back. They scored some nice tries. Matthew Devine obviously scored too, and he provided a little bit of a spark, and you could see, like, the sun was shining in the sports ground, and like, the Connacht have done really well, I think, in terms of starting to produce their own players as well over the last few years. We should definitely point that out. And Matthew Devine is another homegrown talent. But when you're missing kind of Mac Hansen, and it sounds like he might be back for the Munster game in a couple of weeks, I think you need that bit of spark from somewhere. And he certainly provided it. And it's given him some hope of getting into the playoffs and hopefully getting back into the Champions Cup next season. Because, look, they're obviously redeveloping their stadium at the moment. I think it's very important that Connacht key pace. We've talked about Leinster trying to sell tickets in terms of next season when they're moving, but I think it's similar for Connacht. They need to keep the momentum going. It's been a sticky enough season. I think the transition at the start from Andy Friend looked like, you know, it'd been going well, but they kind of hit a bit of a slump in the middle, and it's all about now trying to find that strong finish before the end of the season.
Keane, you're on AIL duty this week. We've got big finals in the Aviva Stadium on Sunday. Railway Union playing New Elbows in the women's final. And then Cork Conn against Terranure on the back of two really dramatic semi-finals in the men's. I think there'll be a big crowd at Lansdowne Road for the game. It's been broadcast live on TV, TG Cahir. Why, I suppose, should casual rugby fans who don't really see a lot of club rugby, why should they be tuning in or making their way to Ballsbridge on Sunday?
Well, you're going to get plenty of bang for your buck anyway, because it's the first time ever the AIL finals has been held as a double header. So that's obviously fantastic in itself. I've been chatting to a couple of the the women's players, Niamh Byrne from Railway Union and Chloe Pearce from UL Bowes. And, you know, they're making the point that they never thought they'd get a chance to play at the home of Irish rugby, which is mad, really, when you think about it. So it's a massive occasion for those two teams who, you know, Railway Union are trying to bounce back. They lost the final last season. And interestingly, in both men's and the women's divisions, there was only a point separating the teams at the top. So, look, it couldn't be more finally poised. Anyone who's tuned into the men's AIL finals over the last couple of years, even on TG Cahir, and it's brilliant that TG Cahir are getting behind this again and supporting it. The quality of rugby on show has been brilliant. I know you had a really good piece with Jordan Coughlin last season, who's come back from England playing for Terenure. You've got a lot of guys like that who have come back and maybe haven't quite cut it in the professional game, but you've also got a lot of young, you know, academy hopefuls that are hoping to push on through. Obviously, Connor slightly hampered by that this week because they've got one or two players who are over in South Africa with Munster, and they're not going to be back in time. But the quality of the league, it's a bit like, I would say, the League of Ireland. I know you're a big League of Ireland fan, Rod, but the AIL, I would say, has enjoyed a real rebirth over the last few years, similarly to the League of Ireland. There's a great buzz behind it. It doesn't get as much attention, obviously, as the pro teams. But this weekend, even allowing for the fact that it's a huge round of the URC, this is the biggest weekend in Irish club rugby, and you've got four cracking teams on show. So I would definitely urge anyone who's able to get down and watch the games, and if not, definitely tune in on TV. I think if anyone hasn't seen it, they'll be pleasantly surprised by the quality on show.
Well, it's time for our Bank of Ireland moment of the week. And I'm going to change my mind. As I listened to Keane and talk about club rugby, I'm going to go with Sean O'Brien winning the Towns Cup with Tullow at the end of his career. He always said he wanted to do it, and he got there in the end down in Carlow Rugby Club at the weekend. I was going to go with one of Orgy Snyman's carries, but the pictures that, you know, of Sean celebrating with his young child, it was a fairly magic moment. Luke, what do you have for us?
I was going to go with the Cormac Isichuku try, but I'm not sure that's actually allowable now. It sounds like everyone thinks that was completely illegal. I didn't see.
Doesn't matter.
Sorry.
He got away with it, so you could definitely go with it.
Yeah, but look, it was a serious, like, to get back in position and to stop the try. I actually am going to go, maybe I'm being naive, I think he was actually trying to kind of drag him out and ended up in a position where his legs got in the way. And I'm going to say not illegal, because it's kind of similar to legs getting in the way of someone over the line, like say in a mall type scenario. And I think it wasn't, because I don't think he was trying to kick it out. So I'm going to say that one. And it was kind of a key part, along with obviously that fairly controversial decision in Ulster getting a much needed win, pretty undeserved, but I think a much needed win.
Just quickly, you must be delighted for your old teammate still going, like, you know, could come back off the professional game and playing a bit of club rugby.
Shawnee, I mean, like, yeah, like it's great for him. I mean, he's obviously finding it hard to walk away. I mean, I don't know how pleasant that would be for for someone who's rocking up after doing a 9-to-5 all week and having to tackle Shawnee at that level. But yeah, it was pretty unpleasant to do it when you're a professional rugby player, but let alone being an amateur one. But look, no, it's great to get it for him to get it. I know he's been a big part of the club down there. He's given a huge amount of his time over the years to that, and he's very passionate about it. That is genuine from him. He would have loved that day out. So delighted for him, and delighted for everyone down in Tullow, and hope they enjoy the win now and they don't go too overboard with the celebrations.
Keane, get your moment of the week.
I thought you were going to go for Aaron Egan's kick for Terenure, Rod, to win the game after I had given the big up to the AIL, which, to be fair, is definitely worth an honourable shout out, because Terenure missing Caelan Dooley, who was the star of the show in last year's final, drew plenty of praise from Ronan O'Gara, amongst other people, but he's gone off playing in America now. But that was a brilliant moment by Aaron Egan. But I've gone for maybe slightly obscure one. I've gone for John Hodnett's tackle on Curtly Arense shortly after he came on. I thought Hodnett was outstanding. I thought he was only on the pitch for 25 minutes, half an hour, and it was nearly an argument that he was man of the match. He was outstanding. And I thought that moment really summed up the attitude of the Munster bench. I mean, if you've got Arense running at you, well, I'm obviously not a professional rugby player, but I would say it's a total nightmare when he's got space and he's coming at you. And Hodnett absolutely nailed him. And I thought it was a bit of a marker down that the Munster bench their own version of the bomb squad, really, in that they went 6-2, that they weren't going to take a backward step, that they were actually going to push on and finish the job here, or help finish the job. And that's exactly what they did. So I thought that summed up a brilliant impact from the Munster bench in what was an absolutely vital win.
Well, Croke Park may be looming in the near distance, but as you can hear, there's plenty to look forward to this weekend with the provinces and the AIL before we head up Jones's Road. My thanks to Luke and Keane. We'll be back to look back at those games next week and to preview Leinster's semi-final. But in the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or listen on the Irish Independent website. Until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.